A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rehm, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on May 16, 1993, entitled, Would You Know My Name If I Saw You in Heaven? The scripture readings are Revelation 22, verses 1 through 5, and John 20, verses 11 through 23. The texts for the sermon are John 20, verse 16, and Revelation 22, verse 4. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
It was a Sunday after Easter when I shared with you that wonderful promise in the revelation of Christ to John from the 21st chapter, promising that in the new heaven and the new earth there would be no more tears, no more dying, no more pain, no more death, for the former things had passed away. And the following day, my son Jonathan came up to the loft and he said, Say, Dad, he said, you know Eric Clapton? And I said, No. And he said, Everybody knows Eric Clapton. He said, Well, you know the song Tears, Tears in Heaven. I said, No. I said, what's that CD in your hand? He said, well, he said, yesterday when you mentioned No More Tears, I thought of this song, and I have it on a CD. And I said, well, play it for me. And so he played it for me. And I think there's something about those of us born before the Second World War that we're not quite attuned to catching the lyrics. And so I said to him, could you write out the words for me? And so he wrote out the words for me. And then he began to tell me the story of Eric Clapton and this song. And thus a sermon was born. Eric Clapton, guitarist, soloist, songwriter, began his career in the 60s with all that that implies. The rock scene, the hippies, the drugs, all of that culture in reaction, so alien to everything that someone like me knows. He sang and his career took its course through some deep valleys and some bright moments, and then it was in March 20 of 1991, that a housekeeper left open the window of their 53rd floor apartment in Manhattan. And his four-year-old son ran through the window and fell to his death. And in the subsequent year, Eric Clapton wrote music in order somehow or other to deal with the intense pain of his life. Almost a year later, he was called to score a movie entitled Rush. He looked at some clips, went to his hotel room, came back the next day and threw on the desk of the director this song, Tears in Heaven. And he said, it probably won't work. It's far too personal. Maybe it's almost maudlin. But if you don't like it, I'll try something else. Well, the rest is history. For that song, Tears in Heaven, was the winner of 6 Grammys in 1992. It was Song of the Year. And the album in which it appears was the album of the year. And when I heard the story of Eric Clapton, together with this song, then I knew that there was something very deep in the human heart that wants to know whether or not deep and intimate love can ever finally be lost. There is something in the depths of us not just superficial sentiment. It's something primal in us that needs to know that love will never be defeated, and that those we've loved will not be lost forever. That was the case with Mary. No one loved Jesus more than Mary Magdalene. She met him. He changed her life. She followed him with devotion. She was the last one at the cross. She was the first one at the tomb. And discovering the stone rolled away, returned to the disciples to tell them. Peter and John investigated. Peter saw and was confused. John saw and believed. But then they left, and Mary was there alone again with her grief. That deep need to be reconnected. That deep yearning for reunion with that one whom she so dearly loved. She looked in and saw the angel and heard the word, but it didn't register. She heard a voice behind her, and she turned and supposed it was the gardener. And she said, "If you've taken away the body of my Lord, just tell me and I'll take it away." At which point the risen one said, in that voice familiar, "Mary." And she knew him. And she cried out, "Rabboni," which means "my dear teacher, my beloved one, the one for whom my heart has been breaking." Mary heard the voice of the one she loved, and it spoke her name. The message of Easter, reduced to its barest minimum, is the truth that love cannot be defeated, that love cannot finally be defeated. But that truth, wonderful as it is, needs for us to be personally made concrete. What we need is a name, a face, a voice, to know that we'll not always be severed from those whom we loved and lost a while. Mary experienced again that longing, fulfilling that deep primal need that is not something peculiar to Christians, but coming out of this alien culture from a performance on MTV, if you will, this haunting question: if I saw you in heaven, would you know my name? If I saw you in heaven, would it be the same? I saw you in heaven, would you hold my hand? Would you help me to stand? As I reflected on the song, I thought of this gospel narrative, John relating this resurrection morning encounter of Mary with her beloved Jesus, risen, transformed, and see it as an answer to those deep questions of the human heart. It seems to me in the story that we see that there is both continuity and transformation. Would you know my name? The answer is yes. Would it be the same? The answer is no. Would you hold my hand? The answer is yes. Would it be the same? No, it wouldn't be the same, because in the Gospels, in the Easter narratives, there is an attempt to witness to both the transformation and the continuity. There is transformation. This is what I've been trying to say in these weeks past, that it is not as though that corpse that was laid in Joseph's tomb was suddenly resuscitated and came back to life. That is not what the Easter Gospel is all about. It is not as though Mary or anybody meeting Jesus who had known him before would simply say, "Oh, there he is, thank God." We know from, for example, the story of the two on the road to Emmaus. How long did he walk with him? How many miles? How much conversation? And they didn't know him. They didn't recognize him until at table he broke bread, and they knew him in the breaking of the bread. And on the Sea of Tiberias that early morning, when he prepared breakfast for the disciples who had been fishing all night, they conversed with him and didn't immediately recognize him. It was only later that they said, "It's the Lord." And here too, it wasn't simply that Mary was so overcome with grief that her eyes were swollen shut, that she didn't recognize that this was Jesus. She looked him in the face. She didn't know until that voice spoke her name. And then she knew. There was recognition. And recognition comes from the Latin re cognitio, cognition. Cognition, to know. Re, again. To recognize is to know again. To recognize is to become aware again of something known before or someone known before. You see, it was not simply a matter within the human capacity of Mary to recognize this one. It was a gift of revelation. It was that voice. It was that same loving presence. And she recognized him. And she said, "My dear teacher." It was in the gift of revelation that the recognition came. But there was transformation. The transformation, Paul speaks of it in that great resurrection chapter, the 15th chapter of 1 Corinthians. If you want to hear Paul stumble and stammer, then read this chapter throughout as he deals with what he admits is a mystery. He says, "But someone will ask, how are the dead raised? With what kind of body do they come?" And then he says, not altogether with sensitivity, "Fool, what you sow does not come to life unless it dies." And then he uses the analogy of the seed. The seed that is planted into the ground is not the seed that is resurrected. The seed that is planted into the ground is a seed that disintegrates. And as it disintegrates, it gives up its life, and then there comes forth this splendid new life, the plant, the blossom. And Paul says it's like that with resurrection. He says, "So it is with the resurrection of the dead, sown perishable, raised imperishable, sown in dishonor, raised in glory, sown in weakness, raised in power, sown a physical body, raised a spiritual body." What do you mean, Paul, a spiritual body? That's a contradiction in terms. A spiritual body. And Paul would say, "I don't know what I mean. It's a mystery." Paul didn't think that all were going to die in his day. He expected Jesus any moment. And in this chapter, in the last paragraph, he says, "We shall not all die, but we shall all be changed. Flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of heaven. We shall not all die, but we shall all be changed in the moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump." There's transformation. It's not simply a matter of the resuscitation of a corpse. Whatever happened to Jesus is that Jesus moved through death into the presence of God and was transformed into another dimension. Will it be the same? No. But not less. But more. But there's not only transformation. Thank God there's also continuity. It was His voice. It was her name. And the beautiful picture of the New Jerusalem, the heavenly Jerusalem that comes down from God with the crystal river flowing through its midst and the leaves of the tree on its bank for the healing of the nations. We are told that His servants shall worship Him and they shall see His face and His name shall be on their forehead. And there will be no darkness, no need of lamp or sun, for the Lamb Himself will be the eternal light in the eternal presence of the eternal God when we shall be all together in that presence. And it would seem to me that in this story, that continuity would assure us that we'll know our names and the names of those we've loved and lost a while. And they'll hold our hand, enabling us to stand. For isn't it true now that we encounter God in the love of another? Isn't it true now that we experience God in the face of another? Is it not in the face of Jesus Christ that we have seen the light of the glory of the knowledge of God? And is it not in the face of the other whom we love that we experience in that union and communion the reality of God and of grace and of love? And is it not for that communion and that union that we long? Is it not that why we grieve when that union and communion is broken? Is that not this deep primal longing and yearning? Is there not in that longing that is in us all an intuition of the truth of that continuity that means I'll know your name when I see you in heaven. That I'll know the names and hear the voice of those I've loved and lost a while. It seems to me that in the story we have the deep answer to that longing within us that doesn't come to expression in any direct and rational way in the Scripture, for how can you speak rationally of a mystery so deep? But is it not our longing? And is not the longing a sign? And is not the fact that a song like Tears in Heaven, which came out of the deep pain of a father who had lost a child, that touched a nation, is it not a sign that deeper than our depths, that is that for which we long? More than surface sentiment, more than wishful thinking, it is the depths of our being that cry out and say, the communion and the union that I've known is a reunion that I must be able to hope for. Will you know my name if I saw you in heaven? The answer is yes. Would it be the same if I saw you in heaven No. Not less, but more. Would you hold my hand if I saw you in heaven? Would you help me to stand? Yes, surely. For eye has not seen, nor ear heard, nor has it entered into the human heart, the things that God has prepared for those who love Him. Tears in heaven? No. No tears in heaven.